This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Oceania, the vast Pacific. I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, my guide in Oceania, which is now in contention. I read a statement by the Chinese foreign minister, the very notable Mr. Wang Yi, recently made as a moment in his visit to many of the island nations now in question along this vast circumference of the equator, north and south of the equator, reaching towards Australia. The foreign minister said to the 10 states he's dealing with, "Don't be too anxious and don't be too nervous, because the common development and prosperity of China and all the other developing countries would only mean great harmony, greater justice, and greater progress of the whole world." Cleo, a very good evening to you. Mr. Wang Yi is anxious himself. What is driving his statement? What in the news has made the very confident, self-confident foreign minister think that the other nations are anxious? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So he is on this epic trip. It's a 10-day trip through the region. And just before the trip took off, there was a leak of two documents. One was a vision statement, which is how China wants to interact with the Pacific Islands over the future, this kind of this harmony that he's talking about. And of course, it's always harmony with Chinese characteristics, right? It's you harmonize to us. And within that document, there are elements that talked about harmonizing security and policing and all sorts of stuff like that. And then there's a second document, which was a five-year plan, which talked in detail about the sort of things that they wanted to do over the next 5 years to achieve that harmony. And that also had very specific elements down to how many scholarships Xinjiang was going to offer to the Pacific Islands or what Guangdong was going to do. And it had things about humanitarian assistance and disaster relief and how they would pre-position emergency supplies in the region. So it had all of these elements that, you know, sound good. You want scholarships and you want training and you want HADR, but they all serve this vision of pulling the Pacific Islands right into the Chinese orbit and pushing the front line beyond the South China Sea right to a couple of thousand kilometers off the coast of Australia and Hawaii. So basically trying to extend this political warfare sphere of influence with kinetic possibilities across this zone, which is 1/6 of the planet.
The president of the Federated States of Micronesia, Daniel Panuelo, has spoken eloquently about his concern about the Chinese vision and action plan. The action plan is extremely detailed, as you say, disaster planning, pre-positioning supplies, ministerial dialogue. But Mr. Panuelo reminds us these attractive words must be studied and consider the motive of the People's Republic of China. And I believe, Cleo, he's the one who went right to this is a threat, and the threat has to do with Taiwan. Now, that is a leap to go from the South Pacific to Taiwan. What is it that makes Taiwan threatened by what appears to be Chinese generosity?
This was an extraordinary letter, incredibly brave and prescient. He's from a country, the Federated States of Micronesia, that actually has relationships with Beijing. So some of the countries in the Pacific recognize Taiwan and some work with Beijing. And he's one of the Beijing ones. So for this to come from him in that context was remarkable to begin with. But the contents of the letter show an understanding of Chinese strategy and political warfare efforts that is deeper than what you see in a lot of the think tanks in many parts of the world, including Washington. So, for example, he says, "We know that the Chinese research vessels are going up and down our undersea cables and trying to figure out what our communication infrastructure is, in part to be able to monitor all of our communications. And, of course, that would have military implications." And what he points out is that these countries are on the backside of Taiwan. So if China's, we tend to think about the invasion of Taiwan activity happening between the Chinese coast and Taiwan. But of course, if China grabs Taiwan, the center of the circle that you draw is on Taiwan. So you need to be able to draw a circle around Taiwan and then secure Taiwan at the center of that circle. And that circle out to the east goes through a lot of these Pacific islands. So they know that they're on the front line of any Taiwanese invasion and control scenario. And they see it happening. They see the pieces being put in place through things like what China wants to do through the five-year plan coming to fruition in some of the Pacific Island countries. And it should be said that, you know, I think Wang Yi may or may not have thought that this deal would get signed on this trip. It hasn't been signed, but I don't think that means it's over by a long shot.
The encirclement that you mentioned is also part of the first island chain that the U.S. Navy and Australia AUKUS maintains, the first island chain from Japan down to the South China Sea onto Indonesia. But I discovered that China has its own idea about a first island chain. Cleo, I hadn't seen this before. I looked at a map. Cleo's introducing me to a part of the world where I only ever knew it through a TV show in the 1950s called South Pacific, The Adventures in the South Pacific, where each week our hero and his companions would sail around in a huge sailing boat and have exotic adventures with people who live there. But when you look at the map, you see that China is considering its own first island chain from Papua New Guinea through the Solomons and then reaching into Vanuatu, Fiji, Tonga, of course, FSM, and then reaching as far as Kiribati. So what they're constructing is a way to cut off communication between Australia and the U.S., Hawaii, and also to contain any counter that the U.S. and Australia could deploy coming out of the Northern Australia Darwin port towards towards Taiwan. Do people in Washington see this, Cleo, the thing that you make very clear in your article?
I think that a lot depends on how much you know about World War II. So we just commemorated Memorial Day, and tens of thousands of Americans died in those exact locations. And when you look at where China is trying to do its infrastructure projects, you've got places like Luganville, Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Macon. I mean, these are, if you do a map where you look at the major battles of World War II in the Pacific theater and overlay China's activity, you see a lot of overlay. So if you know that map, if you know the World War II map, and then you see what's happening in the Pacific, it's not a big leap to say, okay, this is a new version of this Japanese East Asian co-prosperity sphere. And the goal is to create a network of installations that are initially civilian but have these dual-use capabilities to cut off the allies from each other. You didn't mention New Zealand, but of course New Zealand would get cut off as well, although I'm not quite sure what that would mean, except in the context of Five Eyes. So it would cut off the cables as well, as President Panuelo pointed out. So it is this ability to interdict and to keep Australia at least out of the game if there is activity in Taiwan is very clear. Once you take a look at the map, overlay it with World War II map and missile ranges and those sorts of issues, it's clear. It's very clear. We're at a period where you pull the maps out of the map drawers and you lay them on the chart table, and you have to take a look at why people are pouring disproportionate amounts of money into locations that don't seem to make sense unless you're developing a strategic asset.
Cleo does us the favor of reminding us that the law of the sea grants a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone to each of these republics. Some are republics, some are constitutional monarchies, and three are in relation to the U.S., and we'll speak of those in a moment. But when you lay out 200 nautical miles, you're covering how much of this, how much of the Earth, Cleo, is all told? Is this a third of the Earth?
Well, the zone of Oceania is about 1/6 of the planet. Some of that is covered by EEZ. Most of it is, not all of it. But if you take a country like Kiribati that you mentioned before, that has a population of about 120,000 people. That it's an independent country with a population of 120,000 people, but it covers as much of the planet with its exclusive economic zone as India. So this is a very, very vast area, and it's difficult for those countries to monitor them. They don't have the navies required to monitor them. And so there you get a lot of this illicit activity by China anyway on things like fishing fleets. And one of the things that would definitely help would be to help them monitor their fisheries, which is something that the Quad talked about at its last meeting, so that the countries could generate enough revenue domestically so they didn't have to become indebted to China. These are fiercely independent countries, and in many cases, the vast majority of the population don't want to become vassal states. They were during the colonial period, and they don't want it to happen again.
What is striking is that the presumption of Wang Yi's visit would seal the deal. That was the presumption before. The visit is from late May into early June, so it's ongoing. However, it did not. Hence the statement, don't be too anxious and don't be too nervous. So what is to be done? Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. And when we come back, pieces of the puzzle that are within the authority of Australia, New Zealand, the United States. And I mentioned that states such as France and the United Kingdom can take place, can take part in this because they have possessions in islands or trusteeships in islands or relationships in islands that span across the Oceania vastness. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.